Just let me live, Steph. Just let me do.
It occurs.
It's because I messed up my word, and then I said it weird, and then I just kept going.
Yeah, it's okay.
Welcome to Cancer for Breakfast with Amy and Steph. I'm Amy.
And I'm Steph. We try to make Cancer for Breakfast safe and comfortable for everyone. It may not be suitable for all audiences and is intended for informational and educational purposes only.
It is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
We're not doctors.
We didn't even go to podcasting school.
Hi, Amy.
Steph is just over there having a really, really long hot flash.
It's not done. It's still here.
She's flapping her fan fingers.
It's less of a flash than a slow roll.
Damn it. Welcome to Cancer for Breakfast, listeners. So good to have you here. We're going to try to record more regularly. I don't like lying to you, so I'm saying it out loud. I don't like lying to you, but I do it sometimes.
It's true. We do that. I'm sorry, you guys. So I was just at Amy's house, which was thrilling.
Chateau Dials.
Yeah. Except that she gave me norovirus.
And my house smelled like a dead rat because a rat had died in my ducts, which I did warn you about before you came.
Listen,
but you still,
that is no big,
said it was okay.
Anybody who lives in, I want to say, you know, I was going to say the Pacific Northwest, but I also just want to broaden this to maybe anyone. Like, you live in a place, there are varmints out there.
Yeah.
They crawl into your house.
They get in.
And they die. Like, it's the circle of life, my friends. I don't care.
It was a rough 2 weeks at my house. That's all I'm going to say. It's just get it out of my system. They finally got it 3 days ago, but that thing smelled so bad. When you did come down, I really appreciate that you were like, I don't give a crap if it smells like a dead rat. Who cares? Come on, you know?
Yeah.
You were very sweet about it because I was embarrassed. But I do think that our joke was pretty funny about how we were going to go down into the basement and give it a little rat memorial service.
Yeah.
And then I was like, we should blast the rat's theme song. And you were like, oh, yeah.
A better way to honor the dead.
So back to what you were saying.
So I was there. It was great. Some of it, anyway.
The parts that I wasn't a part of were great.
It's true. There was a soak and sauna day with people from the Oregon Breast Cancer Collective / Breast Friends / Cancer for Breakfast group. We went to this wonderful place called Connect Wellness in Vancouver, Washington. And we did cold plunges. We went in the sauna. We went in the little warm tub together. We chatted. I got to meet people.
I wasn't there.
She doesn't know that it was great, but it was.
But also, before you go on, let's just say to listeners who are like, what the fuck? They had a cancer for breakfast thing. You know, this is that group that we talked about. That's the breast cancer support group in real life for people that were diagnosed under 50. You are welcome to join it.
Yeah.
If that is you, continue.
Yeah. So it was really lovely. I was excited to come down for it. And I was excited to stay at Amy's by myself. It was a little bit of a weekend break. And then I was approaching the greater Portland metro area. And Amy texted me to say she was feeling off. She was going to lie down and try not to puke.
I did say that.
Listeners, I don't think that we have told you in a while, if we've told you at all. I don't know that we've
To the extent that we might tell you now, because this is actually a little bit of a fascinating topic. And we will give you the warning. It does involve discussing vomiting. So if that's your phobia.
Or V, as emetophobes like me call it.
Okay. So your name is Stephanie and you are a whatophobe?
Emetophobic.
That's a thing.
It is. So I am afraid of vomit and people vomiting. And, you know, I say that and almost universally people would be like, oh my God, I know, me too. Like mm-hmm. whenever somebody throws up, I like have to, and I'm like, nope, no, actually. Yeah. Like most people don't like it. Most people say they hate it. No, this is like a legit phobia where I have panic attacks. I like hyperventilate, you know, I feel like I'm going to pass out. I have literally never been able to deal with it with my children. Mm-hmm. Even before any of my kids were born, I told my husband, like, this is going to have to be all you. Like, I literally cannot even help. I need to like be medicated if my kids are sick with a vomiting illness. It's really bad. I told because, okay, long story short, here's the spoiler alert. Amy had a vomiting illness.
It came out of nowhere.
So I walked into Amy's house and she's like, don't look, I'm so sorry, don't look at me. And she's like shaking.
I was just in a nightgown covered in throw up. I'm just kidding. I wasn't. That's not true at all.
No, she was not. I would have turned around and walked away. But yeah. You were like shaking with a bowl. You had a towel. You looked miserable. And
I had just exited the restroom upon the first Ralph. I was at a party. Everything was fine. Then all of a sudden I was like, I have to leave now. And I just walked out, got in my car. And I was like, what is this body? Had no idea what the freak was going on. And then within an hour, I had just barfed my brains out. And it is okay to talk about barfing our brains out, right, Steph? That doesn't affect your thing in a way it used to more.
No. I feel like on venlafaxine, I am the most able to talk about it as I have ever been. There was definitely a point in my life where I really could not. I couldn't talk about it at all. I couldn't hear people talking about it. My anxiety definitely peaks when people say they don't feel well. This is a different subject, though. This is just talking about the things that have already happened, not potentiality. So, yeah, I mean.
Right. So if I was with you having lunch and I was like, I feel really sick, I'm feeling really nauseous, you would start.
I would be like,
oh,
I love you. Goodbye.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it was kind of like a nightmare scenario, which is really funny mm-hmm. that I have cancer. And of course, like, what do people associate with cancer? Like medication.
Mm-hmm. That is
but funny. Vomiting.
I'm just joking.
I have actually not vomited from cancer yet. I'm sure I will someday.
I want to talk about this for a minute. Mm-hmm. Pause here. Not only have you not vomited from any sort of cancer treatment, you are a professional non-vom.
Yeah.
Which is something I just coined for somebody who does not vomit. Yeah. You have willed your body to not vomit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have vomited. You counted off the... I'm sorry for saying the word vomit so much. I don't even have a problem with it, but it is still disgusting to say sometimes. You counted off the times in your life where it has reached that point for your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's
six. And you had like specific scenarios and where you were and how old you were. And it was like five times or something.
Yeah, I think it's six. Yeah.
It is now. No, I'm just kidding.
It is not, thankfully.
It is but, not.
Yeah, I don't endorse this. Like, I am fairly certain that it makes me feel worse for longer. But
oh my God,
I would rather deal with lower GI illness, as in like diarrhea and stomach cramping, than I am able to deal with upper GI sickness, which is vomiting.
But you are able to will your body not to produce that service that it provides for you that most people cannot. They cannot. You like do breathing exercises when you're so nauseous and you feel like it's going to happen to you. You like sit. Tell us your process and it works. And don't ever try this at home, people, because
don't
just get it out.
Unless you're an emetophobe, in which case I say like I'm anyway. Yes. OK, I'm not going to go into that. But yeah, so I did start to feel sick. I got back from Amy's and then it was like the next day that I started to feel a little ick. And you know how it happens, guys. You know, you take a bite of your dinner and you're like, something mm-hmm. feels a little weird. And you don't eat your dinner. And as the night progresses, you're a little bit more and more sure that something definitely is going on.
You get out your Amy voodoo doll.
No. I knew it was either going to happen or it wasn't. And it, whatever, it's nobody's fault. But I went to bed. And yes, I did feel very much like I could throw up. And I did square breathing for about 3 hours.
Oh my God.
And really, I could not focus on anything but my breathing. And I feel pretty certain that if anything had like necessitated my attention, I probably would have lost that control of my body. But yeah, I didn't throw up, and that got me through the night. And I never did throw
I'm
up.
So
it's
sorry.
Totally okay. I don't want you to feel sorry. So you did bad. Feel really
like bad. If there had been enough time, I was so worried when I started realizing how downhill I was yeah. going, because you were like within an hour of coming. And then by the time I actually had that service provided for my body,
yeah, I was like there.
You walked in as I'm leaving the yeah. bathroom.
Yeah.
With my freshly cleaned bowl. But
yeah,
I was so worried. I was like, she's not even going to be able to come in here. Like, can I get her a hotel? And then you were like, in my house. But you, I was proud of you, because you were like, if this had happened a few years ago, I would not have been able to come in.
Yeah.
But I could. And I went into the guest room. I don't have a guest room. It's a 5-year-old's bedroom, in case you think I'm rich.
It is a very comfortable room that I love to stay in. And I did feel kind of bad, because, you know, like, you're one of my dearest friends. I wanted to help you. I wanted to be able to nurse you. That is just not something that I am capable of doing. Mm-hmm. So you and Kevin were very nice. I was like, I'm really sorry. I just need to be able to put my AirPods in and like not hear anything. So I also barred the door, which I felt really bad for your dog about, because Rolo likes to come in and sleep on that bed. But I had to keep the door closed, keep my AirPods in, and I made it. But then I did come down with it. But yeah, I mean, I need to do some more work on acceptance of this bodily function before I start on a medication that
I know I'm so worried for it. This.
I know, but
they're so good at controlling side effects, though.
They are. Yeah.
The medicines
and honestly, like, it hasn't been an issue so far, as long as I've been up front. Like, when I went under anesthesia, I had general anesthesia, and I said I have this phobia of vomit, and they were like,
I might need a square breathe for 4 hours when I wake up.
No, but they were like, there are medications available that have you know, less nausea and vomiting as a side effect, so we'll do that. And anyway, we both survived.
And you had a wonderful time at the breast cancer spa thing.
Yeah, everybody was so nice.
I had organized it, laid in bed all day, being so pissed I wasn't there. But the pictures were lovely.
Yeah, it was great. And I am sorry. I'm sorry that we were sick. But
it's all right. Well, I'm just glad they got the dead rat out of my vent.
I'm glad for that, too.
$500 later. Anyway. So we were going to talk about, oh, okay. We have so much to talk about. What are we doing talking about your non-vom?
Yeah, we've got a news brief.
News brief. If you're not pissed that we've been talking about vomit for so long, you're going to be pissed when you hear this story. And I do guarantee it. So, okay. Stephanie, I sent you this link today. This is something happening in Portland right now.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
I will. So I don't know if you guys remember, but this is reminiscent of the story on a much smaller scale, I hope, of what happened in Ireland with the cervical check pathology debacle. But basically, a Providence pathologist, so Providence is like a healthcare system in Portland, this pathologist has apparently been incorrectly giving people benign pathology results. And these folks, at least seven patients as of this date, February 22nd, when this story was published by Fox 12 News in Portland. And like, yes, it's Fox. Don't come at us. There's no other option.
They're the only ones with their fingers on the pulse. Just kidding.
So like people who have had breast biopsies, cervical biopsies, so like pap smears and
biopsies. It just said pap smears.
Pap smears. And so breast biopsies, pap smears, and thyroid stuff. All of these pathology tests for this doctor, Dr. Jeffrey Harter, who works for Providence, he has been giving people false benign results, and they actually have cancer. So there was this woman interviewed on the news. I feel so bad for her. She says her mother and her grandmother both have died of breast cancer. She had a lump, found it. Through MRI, I believe, right, Amy?
Yeah, she'd been being followed because of dense breasts and her history, I think every 6 months for however many years.
Yeah, and so
finally the lump shows up.
And then her biopsy came back benign. And she was like, are you sure? And then a year later was informed by her, it sounds like her family practice doctor called her. And said, I am so sorry to have to tell you this, but that was a false negative and you actually do have cancer.
Here's the curious thing. Her doctor then said, I have to hang up after this call and make two more of these calls to two more people with the same thing going on with them. That's interesting. It wasn't just somebody from Providence making these calls, that it was her doctor who then had to make two more calls, assuming that that was that doctor's patients. I just, that's the first time I've thought about this as even being like a strange thing. Like, 'cause I'm just trying to be like, who were the people over how many years? Like, but it's strange that three of the eight patients would be from one doctor, unless I misunderstood that. And the other thing is, it did say in the story or in the interview with her, there's like a video component that I watched, and she says, obviously, we'll link it in the show notes. She says when she was like, are you serious? You know, like, this is benign, that she actually, he said to her, I've been doing this for 30 years and it looks like no worries, whatever. And then I was a little bit like another, thing in my brain was like, wait a minute. When do you ever get to talk to the pathologist? You talk to the radiologist. You hear from them after a scan saying, in my experience, in my 30 years, this looks this way or whatever. But that's why you do the biopsy, is to actually find out.
Yeah.
But to be able to actually speak to the pathologist was strange, where I was like, is she actually talking about the radiologist said it was fine? Based on the, I don't know, whatever. I'm getting too into.
You're in the weeds.
I'm getting worked
up. You're in the weeds, Amy. Well,
it doesn't matter. All of our listeners who live in Portland and have used Providence are like in their mind charts anyway. Like, yeah. The name, they're not listening to us anymore.
For sure. Well, I mean, I guess one possibility is that she had a feeling that it was going to come back as malignant. And so she was contacting the pathologist to be like, are you sure about this? Mm-hmm. I personally have never spoken to a pathologist who has interpreted any of my results, but that's the scary thing, is that they are interpretations. And as longtime listeners of the podcast, or anybody who's listened to like my diagnosis episode, knows a lot depends on the skill of the person who is.
But not with tissue samples. That seems way more cut and dry than scan readings.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I do agree with you that it should be more cut and dried. I don't know what was going on with this person, if he actually like wasn't even looking at the samples or.
Can I say something?
Yes, please do.
Sounds pathological to me. No pun. Yes, pun. I don't know which pun, but seriously.
Yeah.
Saying like, because these diagnoses didn't go in the other direction, it sounded like to me. He's telling people they're fine. So either he really is three sheets to the wind, drinking scotch and spilling tissues and just saying, ah, it's probably fine, like some sort of incompetent idiot.
Yeah.
Or he's like sitting there, like, you know, putting something in his trophy book for like, yes, I got another one.
I don't think
like,
we can say this and name him.
Well, I don't really care. We're some stupid podcast. We're speculating. We don't know. We're not. I'm clearly speculating.
Yeah. I mean,
if he wants to sue a cancer podcast on top of all of his other legal problems, I welcome him to. I'm not
cutting any of this shit. Come at us, Jeff. Anyway.
And you can sue me too, Stephanie, if you want me to cut this.
I don't. Then. But I mean, yeah. I mean, like, it does seem like it cannot be just a harmless accident.
No.
Regardless of what happened here, I hope this guy is sued to high heaven for malpractice.
Oh, yes.
By every single person. And I think that this is such a new and developing story that doesn't mean that that's all there is. It means that those are the people who have been confirmed as casualties, of, not casualties, Jesus Christ. As people whose pathology results have been influenced by this guy.
Right.
So,
but who knows? Maybe they've been studying this for a year.
Yeah.
And eight people really is the extent of it. Or maybe they had to come public as soon as possible and they only have gotten to eight. So we like literally have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, eight people is certainly enough for everyone to, one person is enough for anyone to be outraged. But yeah. So that's kind of a big deal. I mean, stuff like this doesn't come to the news that often, where it's real, true medical malpractice. Something that I have heard repeated by several doctors that I've known, that I've worked with, blah, 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 is half of doctors graduated in the lower 50% of their class. And that's something to remember when you're taking their word for it.
Dude. Insanity. Well, we will be following this story.
That's right.
And also, is Providence going to be just sued to the heavens as well? I mean, I can only imagine. It's not just going to be the doctor who gets sued.
Well, Providence will probably have to settle with these people, right? I mean,
I do wonder, like, what things are in place to prevent this kind of stuff from happening. Like, is there no sort of, like, every 200 biopsies, a second set of eyes comes and repeats it just to make sure they're getting the same results? Just some sort of thing of checking to make sure the system in place is actually working?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Blows me away.
Well, I'm sorry to report that. And I don't want to put anybody in the position of like fearing that what they've heard is inaccurate from their physicians or their, you know, pathologists, their radiologists, whatever. But I do think that it's a good idea just in general to make sure that you've got second opinions as an option. If something seems off, you double check, you run it past somebody else. That's one of the great things about support groups is like, especially the medication ones and like, you know, so you can be with people who are kind of in your same boat. I really appreciate being able to say, hey, is anybody else doing this protocol? Or like, this sounds kind of weird to me. Like, this is the recommendation. Does this sound right to everybody else? And more often than not, people are like, oh, yeah, that's totally what is normal. And so that makes me feel a lot better. But sometimes people are like, actually, no, that I had something totally different. And then, you know, it's cool to hear other perspectives. But if you ever feel like you were expecting a very different result than you got, or you think something is off in the way that it was delivered, or anything ever might be questionable, take it farther, because it's your health. It's our health. Like, I can't say for sure that any of these people give a shit. I hope they do, but this guy doesn't seem to have, so.
God. Also, he's been doing it for like
30 years!
Upwards of 30 years. It looks like somewhere in the 20s, but like, how far back are they going on his past?
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, do we have letters, Amy?
Oh my God. Yeah, but I'm so pissed. I'm going to read it in a mean voice, even though it's a lovely letter. Okay, well, here we go. I'm just going to get going here. This letter's from Jamie, and she writes, "Hello to my favorite cancer buddies. I feel like I've listened to your podcast enough that I can now call you friends. If not, just make me feel better and go with it.
Oh,
I apologize in advance for the rambling."
Heck yes, we're your friends.
Heck yes, we're your friends. Come on over. So today I write you as I am a month away from the dreaded scan. And with every scan that comes up, I constantly get into a whirlwind of what if questions. Today, I wanted to focus a little bit more around my thoughts about quote unquote remission or NED and recurrence. And so I want to go all the way back to the first time I heard my doctor say that I was NED. I sat back for at least a day and even the first moments in the doctor's office, and it really all just hit me like a ton of bricks. I never really took the time to think about what I had just went through. While I was going through treatment, I was looking at my doctor constantly and asking, what do I got to do next? Without giving it any thought. What's the next step so that I can beat this? Do you want to put poison through my body? Sure. Will it help me live longer? You wanted me to jump off the 50-foot cliff? Sure. Will that help me live long enough to see my grandkids? But then I got this NED diagnosis. That's no evidence of disease for you new people. And I could finally take a breath. A holy shit truck hit me right in the face, and I broke down crying for days on end and would just kind of sit there realizing everything that I had just went through. So that lasted maybe a week, and then I went into a little bit, no, a lot of a bit of survivor's guilt. I had made some really good friends in the cancer community who were not as lucky as I was, and they were battling stage four and they were dealing with a lot of their own shit, but at the same time still putting on a happy face for me. It was hard for me to wrap my brain around that. How could you be happy for me when you're going through so much pain yourself? How could I be happy for me? Then I went into the dealing with my friends and even went as far as to say, maybe it should have been me with stage four cancer instead of that beautiful human. Oh, no. One of the biggest struggles I have is when someone comes up and says, aren't you so happy that you're in remission? This is so great. You beat it. And sometimes it gives me that toxic positivity vibe. But I put on a happy face and I say, yeah, it's really great. I'm so happy to be here. But in the back of my mind, I'm constantly saying, you don't know what I live with every single day. You don't know what the long-term effects that I have from the chemo or from the surgery. And yeah, you can't feel your toes because you had cancer. Oh, you might shit your pants today because you had cancer. But I can't look at their happy face and say that, because if I do that, then I'm not grateful. So I had to find a way to get through that. I had to find a way to make things more positive. Because let's face it, it is a great thing that you are NED, that you aren't having to be at the cancer hospital every day. And so I went into the throes of this, that it was positive for me. How can I make a positive impact on others too? So I reached out to the cancer hospital that I was treated at and asked how I could give back. We missed a sentence here, which is kind of funny because it's a sentence I'm very curious about, because it seems like she had an opportunity to give back, because then the next sentence says, I soon learned that I was not eligible. Eligible for what? I don't know. Due to a recreational candy that I took.
Boo on them.
So lame. That's why you always lie. You always got to lie about drugs and alcohol. Just kidding.
Well, maybe they're drug testing, though. Hospitals do that shit.
Oh,
Even if you have cancer, they'll drug test you. That's horrible. It's legal, by the way.
Well, maybe they'll have a bum pathologist who will say that you didn't do drugs.
Anyway, okay. Moving on.
So anyway, so she had an opportunity. She couldn't do it. Recreational candy. Highlights. Okay. But they were very impressed with my positivity and willingness to help. So they helped me find some other...
Maybe they should think of where that positivity came from. True.
Sorry. And so they helped me find some other resources. They helped me to become a cancer mentor to other cancer patients. They also had me do a write-up of my cancer story in their monthly newsletter. So that was my way of starting to bounce back and say, hey, it's okay to be happy and it's okay to feel good about beating this thing. So I do try to live every day with, how can my diagnosis help somebody? How can I be a positive impact or an inspiration to somebody? Now, don't get me wrong. I still have moments where I just feel sorry for myself, or I am mad or sad or whatever it might be. One of the biggest thing that comes up quite often is, when are you going to have another baby? And it's really, really hurtful to me. And sometimes I blurt out, because I would have cancer and had chemical menopause, so I can't. I do understand that it is negative and it is a super shitty place to be, and I try not to live there too long. A good friend of mine once told me that it's okay to just be sad, man, and depressed, but don't unpack your suitcase and live there. One of the biggest things that has helped me is surrounding myself with like-minded people. What I mean is that getting a mentor with someone that has had cancer, or joining a Facebook group of people that have been through cancer treatment, or even talking with a therapist, whether they've been through it or not, anything where you can go and have your voice heard and know that it's okay to have these thoughts will a lot of times stop the hamster wheel from spinning. Sometimes being on this hamster wheel can lead to some unhealthy thoughts. You have one negative thought that's not validated, which then leads to another negative thought. And before you know it, you're looking up how you're going to get stage 4 from a mosquito bite. I say this tongue in cheek as I get through a lot of things in life with humor. So forgive me. I also say that this podcast has helped me immensely in getting through all of my scary feelings and situations. I highly recommend this to everybody that I meet going through the cancer battle. I think you both do a really good job of making us feel like we have a home and a safe place. I can't say thank you enough to the both of you for the work that you've done and continue to do. That's so nice. Thanks. Good job, Stephanie.
Good job, Pete.
I will never forget sitting in my therapist's office one day very close to scan day. So of course I was spiraling a bit. And she said to me, "What are you so worried about?" And I kind of laughed and kind of got mad at her at the same time. And I said, "Well, of course I'm worried about the cancer coming back. And I'm worried about what that will do and how my life will change and how my life will be just over." Ensue another spiraling spell. So my therapist looked at me and said, "You're valid to have all of these feelings, but you have to remember these things. You're getting regular checks and you're at a great cancer hospital. Even if the worst case scenario were to happen, you're doing all the right things and it would likely be something that would be treatable if it would be caught." I looked at her and paused and I said, "You're probably right." And so this has greatly helped me not go down the recurrent spiral over and over. That being said, I do still live with a bit of survivor's guilt. Two of the individuals that I met in my cancer groups were unfortunately diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and were taken too soon. Unfortunately, they are no longer with us. I think about them often and the positive impact they've had on my life nearly every day. That being said, I do believe that things happen for a reason. So I go back to, what can I do to make this a positive outcome? Which is where my mentoring comes into play. I constantly look for ways that I can provide any kind of support to someone going through cancer. I've also learned a valuable lesson from a great friend of mine. Feelings should always be validated. It's part of what makes you who you are. Sometimes that may even include you being sad. It's okay to be in a sad spot for a moment, but it's not okay to stay there forever. You can't live in the constant fear of what if it comes back, or what can I do to prevent it? Or why did that person get to live instead of me? Because those questions lead me to a stress-filled life. To be brutally honest, research has shown that stress causes disease. Uh-oh, I'm screwed. And I'm not a doctor or anything close to it, but if stress causes disease and cancer is the disease, stress can't be that great for cancer, right? So in conclusion, I guess what I'm trying to say is everybody should listen to Stephanie and Amy every day. LOL, I'm laughing, but I'm pretty serious. But in all honesty, the bottom line is it's okay to be scared. It's okay to be happy. Just know that other people are going to have those feelings and they may be at opposite times than you. But you need to be willing to accept that. I think the other important thing is to surround yourself with a community that cares and understands what you are going through. I'm also very open to anybody who is in need of that cancer-related friend. Need somebody to listen to you? I'll set up a weekly Zoom call with you. You can text me. You can DM me. You can call me. Anything you need. I really, truly want to make sure that I can give back in any way I can. Also, it's really important to let me know that I was and always will be a part of this community. So I know I've rambled on incredibly way too long, but I hopefully have touched at least one or two people that are listening. I will conclude in saying that I thank you both for everything that you do. There's many days during the throes of treatment that I couldn't have gotten through without you all. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Jamie, hopefully your new friend.
Oh, we love you, Jamie.
If you want to connect with Jamie, hit us up. We will connect you.
Yeah. I love this letter. And Jamie, of course, we're friends. Of course, we're friends. We were already friends even before this. I hope that this eventually circles back and makes sense. But I think that Jamie has given people so many great tips here and like disguised them cleverly as not tips. But, you know, like finding a mentor, finding support groups who see you and hear you for you and can validate your experience, but not like pull you under and finding a way to give back and finding a way to sit in the moment of sadness, but not let it take you over. I think all of that stuff is so important. Yeah, it's just like, it's such a good letter because it covers, I feel like, every base. And then she compliments us at the end, which is really the way to take it home.
What do you think about survivor's guilt stuff? Like, I've always been a little bit, like the way I identify with survivor's guilt, I think is not as, common as like, I think that like, I don't know. What do you think about survivor's guilt? I just want everyone to do well. And then I'm sad when people don't, but I just don't personalize it in some way that like I shouldn't do well, you know, where like I want you to do well. I don't understand it. I mean, I understand it. It's feeling shitty. It's feeling sad.
Yeah.
But it's sad at cancer. It's sad at heartbreak. Can you talk to me about it?
Yeah. I'm not the best person to explain survivor's guilt to you because it's very rare that I feel it. I feel heartbroken for people who do worse than me and their families, their grieving families. Like I am so sad when people die. I think that there has to be some personal connection to guilt in general. Like I am not somebody who feels guilty about a lot of things. That's just like a cool thing about me. I haven't taken on board a lot of guilt for things in my life. So
you will trap a cat and not feel bad about it.
Definitely not. No, I mean, those people are insane. But yeah, like I just, you know, guilt's just like not a thing for me. But
yeah,
in, you know, mostly I feel like there are myriad other feelings that I feel when somebody dies.
Yeah. Terrible feelings.
Yeah.
Terrible feelings, but I don't feel the personal. And maybe sometimes in this podcast, I might say things where because I'm lacking that as much as it seems like is super, super common with cancer patients, the survivor's guilt. I hear it all the time.
It does seem super, super common. I think it's interesting that neither of us really feels much survivor's guilt. I feel some survivor's guilt, like every once in a while, you know, when I'm like hanging out with my kids and like a friend who has kids also, you know, has just died. And I'm like, why do I get to hang out with my kids, like my happy kids, and her kids are grieving? That sucks. But yeah. I don't know. You know, I'm here to normalize not feeling guilty if people don't feel guilty. I also want to sympathize with people who do feel survivor's guilt. Yeah. It's not something that I can necessarily always empathize about, but I think there's just like such a gamut of emotions mm-hmm. that come with cancer and like being in community with cancer people that
fully.
It's all fair game. Like, no shade, but yeah, survivor's guilt can really hit people hard, and
very,
especially when you have like a super close friend that ends up dying, or, you know, even not dying, but doing worse, or, you know, taking a turn when you are having an upturn, and mm-hmm. That can feel shitty because you want to celebrate together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just, I would say if I have any, I don't know, not like my way is better or anything like that, but just trying not to take it mm-hmm. on board. Like, don't act like it's a zero sum game. Like,
right.
But there's plenty of misery to go around. Really. It'll come for you too later.
Well, and on the same note as, why am I able to be here with my family and that person isn't? It's like, that's true of anyone you see, a family playing at the park. Why is this friend not able to?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't take it as personally to my cancer story as to them. I see it as unfair and ridiculous that cancer is so unfair and ridiculous. But I guess it's not about like, I don't know. And I'm not invalidating anything that Jamie said in that story at all. It's just like bringing up that topic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if we'll have time for one more letter, but I kind of wanted to read it because it's on the same topic.
Let's just do it. People can stand like an hour of us or whatever. Come on. I mean,
this one's a bit shorter, but it's also not like super short. So we're here for it. Are you? Okay. So. Lenora so generously writes, hi, Amy. She says that she had...
Excuse me?
What? She knows that I'm a letter reader.
Okay.
Hi, Amy. Don't tell Steph that I said this. And she goes on... No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Actually, never mind. I was going to say the thing about how, like, she's actually applying to me because I had said, do you want to write us a letter about that? And so she's saying,
no, it's okay.
She wrote us a letter. But I was the one that said, do you want to write us a letter? But just let me live, Stephanie. So she says, I had my last emo. My last emo concert was the Get Up Kids. I think it was.
I was gonna say it. Get Up Kids show.
Playing with the anniversary. And, okay. I had my last chemo for stage 3C, high grade, serous tubo ovarian cancer. Serous, Serous. Sorry if I said that incorrectly.
Serous, I think. Serous.
Yeah. For stage 3C high grade serous tubo ovarian cancer in July, and my gynecological onc said that there is no obvious evidence of disease. Shortly after that, my PCP wanted me to get an MRI of my brain because of months of vertigo that wasn't getting better with PT. She wanted to see if I had a stroke or the cancer had metastasized to my brain. I cried more when she said that than through my entire treatment for OC. I was hoping to get a break for a while. So I was really freaking out, and my therapist told me not to try. Oh my God. Should I just restart this?
Sure. I just like the, my therapist told me not to try. That's what I wish my therapist would have ever told me.
Okay, I'm actually just going to keep going, and because I think that's funny what you just said. I'm not losing a really great joke just because I can't read a letter in complete sentences. Okay, so I was really freaking out when my therapist told me not to try to soothe myself by saying, it's probably nothing, but to realize that whatever the outcome of the MRI, I could deal with it. I thought back on how I got through the first round of treatments, and it really helped. It was hell, but I made it through. I'm actually pretty proud of the way I dealt with it. Even though I had setbacks, ended up in the hospital for a week with neutropenia, and I had my surgery wound get infected and had a two platelet transfusions when the Zejula I took caused thrombo. Wow, you're really testing me here, Lenore.
Thrombocytopenia, Lenore. I got you.
Oh my God. Thank you, Steph. Instead of thinking about all the bad things that could happen, I realized that I can handle whatever is thrown at me. Get ready for this next sentence. By the way, the MRI was negative.
Woo! I thought you were going to dab, Amy. It looked like you were raising your arm in a dabbing motion. I was like, wow. Okay.
Oh man, maybe we should make a YouTube of us recording this podcast so we can dab. Just a couple cool moms doing some dabbing.
And then we'll teach you how to floss like it's 2016.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so the MRI was negative. When I read that, when I was first going through this letter, I was like, yes. Okay. Yeah. So happy to hear that. So she goes on to write, few people with OC get cured. The chance of recurrence is pretty high. And I guess I've digested that piece of information. So for me, it's more of a win if it recurs rather than an if it recurs. Though I do still have hope that I am one of the small group who does not recur and gets cured. I've had one follow-up with my guy in Onc to look for recurrence and have another one coming up. The worst case scenarios creep into the back of my brain and cause a low hum of stress that increases in volume until I tamp it down with the internal discussion about being able to handle whatever it is. I don't know why this helps me. Probably because it keeps me from spiraling in all of the possibilities of the what ifs. And believe me, I can be pretty creative in exploring the worst case. Thank you so much for the cast. It helps me so much, Lenore. So again, she says she thinks about the worst case scenarios creeping up, and then it causes a low hum of stress, but she is able to tamp it down with an internal discussion about being able to handle whatever it is.
Yeah.
She's like, I can handle it. Whatever it is, I've got this. And that is her advice.
That's awesome.
It's good.
I love it. Yes.
Because it's true.
That's another great thing. Just being able to talk it through with yourself.
Yeah.
You don't even have to involve anybody else necessarily. I mean, her therapist gave her the tip, but just having yourself as your own best resource, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Man, so glad that that MRI was clear. And
no.
Hope whatever symptoms you're having have gone away. And I feel you with the worry about it, though. I really, really feel you.
Yeah. I mean, Amy, I think that you've been so transparent about your fears about recurrence that I know for a fact that it's been helpful to so many of our listeners, because there really is that push and pull of wanting to be grateful that you got through it and not wanting mm-hmm. to seem like you're taking it for granted or whatever, especially if you're in community with other people who are still in treatment or who are metastatic or whatever. But it is really scary. I mean, that's legit. And there's no sense in pretending that it's not, or that suddenly once active treatment is over, you're fine and you never think about it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that your ability to be reflective and like work through all of the stuff that you've worked through over the 3 years that we've been doing this podcast, you know, mm-hmm. like that's been such a gift to so many people to help work through their recurrence fears.
Or maybe I'm just like helping people stay worried about it and feel justified in that, because they're like, well, Amy's still worried about it, so I should probably be worried too.
No, I mean, I think
so. Hopefully.
You're the cat trapper in the neighborhood. No, no, but I mean, like your worry has decreased, I think, at a very realistic rate, right? Like,
I feel like I don't think I'm so outrageously out of the norm because of the people in my community who I talk to or hear from that share unprompted similar thoughts. And I think that this podcast is great for talking openly about that stuff too, because like not everybody, you know, gets that confided in them from other people. I don't know. But at the same time, I do think I'm a little bit extra like obsessive about my fears, and I'm just still really trying to work on that. But I did want to say that I have a friend who's a psychotherapist who won't see me for free. Thank you very much.
Rude.
But we were talking about, she deals with a lot of people who struggled with infertility. So a lot of her patients are, I don't think she would mind me sharing this, but one of her patients, Melanie, no, I'm just no, but she was talking about just sort of the similarities between she's a cancer patient, cancer and her knowledge of like infertility stuff and the emotions going through it. And she says, I asked her what she tells her infertility patients about it when they're struggling with it. And she said that expecting someone to get over it is totally unreasonable. And she says when she tells her patients that, that they often break down crying because they have not been validated in that way to be like, no, get over it is not, that is not our goal here. That is not even a reasonable thing. It's like different than that. And I mean, it's like a relief, I think, when people kind of hear that, where it's such the opposite of the let it go and just forgive and just be happy and be grateful and all of that stuff, the performative stuff you have to do to other people, you know. And it's like stuff that's in the past will never truly be fully in the past when it impacts your future or it impacts the possibilities of your future, whether that is not getting to have children and having to, you know, go through your life and adjust to that fact that is a fact for you now, or having to adjust to the fact that if you're someone like me, you may have cancer that could be anywhere in your body next week, in 1 year, in 5 years, and it could not happen. And how much time do you waste worrying that it might happen when it might not happen? And how much is our brain's natural shuffle through of facts?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I love that. That's so smart. To say that nothing is ever truly in the past when it affects your future. That's pretty profound.
Yeah. Yeah.
So casual. Yeah.
You know, I've got a podcast. Can I tell you, I did look up the note of expecting someone to get over it is totally unreasonable because I wanted to remember to say that.
Yeah.
Can I tell you the note that's on the bottom and then we'll get on to rats that has nothing to do with this?
Yes.
But speaking of recreational candy.
Yes.
Sometimes if I have a fucking gummy that has weed in it and my brain gets high, I will write down these weird little things. And this one is so stupid.
I can't wait.
It was a play on words.
Oh,
of mother. Hey, if you're still listening at this point, like,
God bless you.
I don't know what to tell you. It just says mother nature. And then it says another nature, like another. But then I was like, that could be some like cheeky brand, like. And it's also like this play on like there is no other fucking nature. You guys are blowing it. And then like, you know, or like some, I don't know. Anyways, there's another nature.
There's no planet B.
Did we just name the episode?
Oh, I like it. I like it, Amy. Good job. Good job on that.
Speaking of rats dying in my ducts and making my house smell bad. Do you have a rat's friend?
I do. Another kind of ductal cancer. It's in your house this time.
Ductal cancer. Oh, man. Nice. It's rats. It's rats. It's rats.
story of the rise and fall of CAR T cell therapy.
Oh my God, my favorite CAR T cell therapy.
Just kidding. There's no fall of CAR T cell therapy, but.
Is this about those Dana-Farber liars?
Those goddamn Dana-Farber liars. No, here's the thing. So CAR T cell therapy, we have talked about it numerous times on the podcast. It has kind of been touted as like one of the main new frontiers in cancer treatment. So what they do is they take your T cells out of your body, they teach them to fight cancer, and then they put them back in. And the goal, I think, overall has been to do this with not like a person's individual T cells, but like kind of have like the generic version where you could just like take it off a shelf and use it for somebody. So you don't have to take out their own T cells. You can use any old T cells, generic T cells.
You can use a Q cell. You can use an L cell. They're not too picky.
So CAR T cell therapy has been really effective. It's been really great. The bummer is that in the New England Journal of Medicine, there was a story that says, as of December 31st, 2023, which you'll remember was a few months ago, there have been at least 22 cases of T cell cancers that occurred after CAR T cell therapy. And so the FDA is now requiring what's called a black box warning on all existing CAR T cell cancer treatments. Black box warning is kind of like, I mean, just like to loosely describe it, it's kind of like what you have on a pack of cigarettes that says like can cause cancer. Like It's things that have been pretty well proven that your odds aren't great. 22 cases does not seem like a ton. I'm the first one to admit that. And also it feels really disappointing because CAR T cell therapy has been pushed so heavily as something that we should potentially come to rely on in the cancer community. Mm-hmm. So the black box warning is going on. And the thing that they have seen happening is that there was an investigation of these T cell malignancies as types of cancer that occur in the blood cells like lymphoma and leukemia. Mm-hmm. And that has happened in people who receive treatment with CAR T therapies. The FDA has called the risk serious, and we know how little they seem to care about people with cancer. So just kidding, FDA. The therapies are still available. So they're not taking them off the market. They just want people to be aware of the risks because obviously there are significant benefits. There's the first CAR T cell therapy that got FDA approval is called Kymriah, mm-hmm. I think Kymriah. And that's been around since 2017 and it treats leukemia. So it's been around for long enough that they have a pretty good idea what happens. But the initial approvals, I think kind of for any drug, require that they keep track of follow-up studies to make sure that they're safe in the long term for use. And it turns out that enough people have had these cancers pop up that they're saying it's not necessarily safe. We're in sort of a limbo phase where companies are working with the FDA on what happens next. There are a bunch of other drugs. There's this Kymriah. There's Tecartus and Yescarta that are CAR T cell therapies. Obviously, I'm going to put all this in the show notes. There are a bunch of different articles that you can read for yourself. Penn Medicine has a pretty good wholesale rundown of it that tells you exactly what the risks are.
Isn't it like 5 cases or something like that in 27,000, which is like, what, less than 1 in 1,000?
Yes.
Which is like, what, 0.1% of risk? I mean, not to belittle 25 people's lives, but doesn't this seem like, for them, as we know, the FDA, I'm just saying, like, could there be something more at play of the dangers? Or is it really like, if something is that, I mean, even regular ass chemo for a lot of breast cancers can cause secondary cancers. And I think that risk might be like a 1% risk, which is way more than this. And they still give it every day.
Radiation also.
And radiation.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, fully.
Yeah. There are definitely other cancer treatments that are known to cause other cancers. Fully. And not only cancer, but other, you know, heart conditions and things like that. So yes, absolutely. But, and yes, while we think of the proportion of like 1 in 1,000, that seems like very few people for sure. But also, I think if you scale it up to the level that they're hoping CAR T cell therapy would be applied in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, say, yes, it's 10,000 people for this particular group or whatever, but all of the people who have leukemia or lymphoma or whatever. So if all of those people ended up on CAR T cell therapy, 1 in 1,000 people is a lot of people, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you're dealing with 5 million people. And so we don't want to be giving people a secondary cancer that may end up killing them without offering a black box warning. Mm-hmm. I think that it's prudent to give people all the information, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't mind that at all, but it is a little bit disheartening that it takes a little of the wind out of the sails, I guess, mm-hmm. of CAR T cell therapy. And especially if maybe you're like more medically fragile, maybe you're like an older person. Yeah. I don't know. Like, a lot of this just is more information, right? So it's kind of a sad trombone. I don't think it's like a total boner killer. I think like on the scale of sadness for cancer news, I feel that it's more on the sad trombone.
I just have so many questions that I need answered before I know how to think. Cause I'm thinking of like, if they do scale it up to 5 million people, how do those 5 million people fare with their cancers and current treatments versus with CAR T cell therapy? And like those 5 million people, what are we looking at in both, you know, with the CAR T cell, how many of those people have the secondary cancers, but then their other cancer is cured.
Yeah. Well, also something that's interesting is that, so this Penn Medicine article I'm going to include in the show notes gave a lot of insight for me personally. And I think it probably will for some of our listeners who'd like to get a little bit deeper into the science. Also like I do, because it goes into the discussion of like, yes, you can get a secondary cancer, like people who are even part of this study or whatever, this group that they tracked who got CAR T cell therapy, some of them ended up getting solid tumors. So like, say you had CAR T cell therapy because you had leukemia, then you end up with lung cancer, which is a solid tumor, mm-hmm. right? So that doesn't mean that you got it because of CAR T cell therapy. And so one of the examples they give is one patient who developed a secondary lung tumor following CAR T cell therapy. This is a quote now from this Penn Medicine article. It says, an incidental T cell lymphoma was also identified in a lymph node removed during surgery for the lung tumor. So they had a T cell lymphoma, right? Mm-hmm. They had, this poor person had secondary lung tumor following CAR T cell therapy. And then they've also got this lymphoma happening. But when they sent it to pathology, the T cell lymphoma that they found incidentally it didn't harbor the CAR transgene. So, which means it wasn't because of that. There was no clear connection, this article says, to the CAR T cell therapy. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. It's like all kinds of shit can happen in your body.
But maybe that is part of the questions I'm having is like, okay, so that particular person's CAR T cell or T cell cancer might not be attributed to this, but maybe the FDA and whoever is thinking, okay, so those numbers aren't going in, but we have all these other people who have these cancers that can't be attributed to it, but there's like a higher level of people coming down with cancers. Do people say that? No. So maybe it is as a result, but we just can't prove it yet. So like, let's just...
No, I mean, I think that they're pretty clear on the way that they link the secondary cancers to the initial CAR T cell therapy.
Yeah.
And so when they say there are 22 people,
there just are.
It's probably actually 22 people.
Okay, but if you want to believe the man, that's up to you, Steph. That's on you, man.
But, you know, I just think like this, something at the end of this Penn Medicine article is basically like them just saying, look, like we have to all together, doctors, patients, families, we all have to have all the info that we can to see what's actually the best option for people. Clearly, sometimes it's still going to be CAR T cell therapy because they haven't taken it off the market. But I do think, you know, it's nice to have the warning on there just so you know, hey,
yeah,
this is what we found. Clearly, like no cancer treatment is probably going to be without risks. And
except for the ones that all of our listeners have completed or are
currently. That's right. Yours are great.
Yours are good.
The only risks are a dazzling personality.
Really, really good skin.
Yeah. So
the faint smell of roses. Okay. Well, we should probably cut it off. We are definitely going to have to edit this down because this is, I don't even want to tell you how long it is right now, but it'll probably still be pretty long when you hear it. So sorry and you're welcome.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Hey, will you rate us? If you have listened this long, you might as well just rate us.
Yeah, I have scans this week. So wish me luck. What? I have scans this week.
What day?
Wednesday.
Are you getting a biopsy too?
No, not yet.
Jesus. When is this happening?
Moves at a snail's pace, Amy.
As does your cancer. Thank God. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. Best of luck on your scans, listener, if you do have them coming up.
Yeah, let us know how they go.
So this cat is playing us out like a sad trombone.
That's right.
Have a great day.
Goodbye, Stacey.
Oh, my God.
Cancer for Breakfast is hosted by Amy Dials and Stephanie Lajeunesse and produced by Nathan McGeehee. Our theme music is written and performed by Vivivir.
Find us at cancerforbreakfast.com, Instagram at cancerforbreakfast, and email at cancerforbreakfast@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening.